Oh, that's right. We're right here this afternoon, Monday afternoon, 4:07 in the afternoon. And back when it was primary season, I had Joyce Dickerson here with me. She is a Democratic candidate running against Tim Scott's seat for Senate. She is in the county council for Richland County District 2. She just told me her seat is safe there, but she has her eye on becoming the next senator from South Carolina. How you doing today, Joyce?
Very well, Ann. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks to have you here today.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, exactly. So you had a pretty phenomenal campaign when you look at who you ran against and where you ended up there.
I am so excited. I think when we looked at the numbers and we were all sitting at my little party waiting on the numbers to come in, and when we saw the numbers get up to 60, 65, and then they hit the little check mark and say we declared Joyce Dickerson the winner in the June 10th primary, and we found out later that we won 45 of the 46 counties. I mean, that was something for our whole team to shout about.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's terrific. So how has it been now, though, since you've been campaigning, now that you are the Democratic candidate?
It's been great. I tell you, right now we are fighting every day. And ever since we won, we have been fighting to squeeze people in to fill their request for me to come and speak. I mean, it's been overwhelming.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you took the time to come see us again, Joyce.
Well, we had to squeeze you in as well. Yeah, yeah. We had to really juggle the books to get here today. But we were determined that we would take advantage of every opportunity to get a word out to the people of South Carolina that I am a candidate, and we are excited about this race.
Absolutely. Now, of course, right now, it does look like Tim Scott is in the lead here. And of course, Joyce, you're running with a lot less money than what Tim Scott has.
Yes.
Talk to us about that. How are you working this now, Joyce?
I tell you, we are working with a lot less money. My opponent, he is well funded, and I am well underfunded. To say the least. But you know what? I think, people are the people that we've talked in the grassroots, when they've seen how I've taken one staff member and ran this campaign, they can't believe it. And when we tell people, oh my God, I have one staff member, they think that I have a whole entourage, but I don't. I have some volunteers that are very, very good, but I have one paid staff member, and she's with me most of the time.
Wow.
Uh-huh. But we take the little bit that we have, and we just stretch it, and we do the job. We know what needs to be done, and we do the job. We refused to try to even sign my name on a dotted line to commit myself to $15,000 a month to pay a consultant, and 10% of whatever they do, and there's no guarantee. So we're
right.
Happy with what we're doing, and we think the grassroots is the best way.
Now, you are traveling the state. Have you been to all of the state, or what are you concentrating on, Joyce?
I have been in 44 of the 46 counties in this state.
Well, good for you, Joyce.
44,
Dickerson.
And at least twice. And the other two, we're going to pick them up this week.
Wow.
Yes.
What two are left?
Oconee and Pickens.
Oh, okay. So
yeah.
They're right up the road.
Right up the road. Yeah, we got to come back this way again.
Wow. Well, that's great. Now, when you look at the issues between you and Senator Tim Scott, what do you feel is the biggest issue that sets you apart from him?
Well, I think when he is not in favor of, like domestic violence and violence against women, I think to me that should send a message to the fathers and brothers that someone will vote against, violence, home violence. And I think
now, what are you talking about? I don't know what
well,
you're talking about,
Joyce. Well, when you talk about domestic violence and violence against women,
correct.
And Senator Scott has voted against that.
In what aspect?
And the violence against women aspect. And so that's troubling to me. The fact that he's not supporting the raising the minimum wage. He says it's a killer, it's a job killer. No, it's an economic stimulus. And I think it's important that we raise the minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.10. It's going to help improve the quality of life for a lot of families, and it's also going to improve our economic base.
except how many, I'm going to go, I went through this the other day with a candidate.
Okay.
How many people are actually working at minimum wage that are not, high school students, just new to the workforce? How many are actually working at that rate in today's world?
Well, let me just be perfectly clear. I never say anything if I don't have a fact to it.
Okay.
I just know that many of the families that I come in contact with on a grassroots level, I know a lot of families that are working for minimum wage, 2 and 3 jobs at minimum wage, trying to keep food on their table, trying to keep clothes on their children's back with the help of some public assistance to make sure that they can kind of stay afloat. Yeah, there are a lot of families, but, you know, I'm glad you asked that question, and I'll make sure that I get that answer. But I cannot tell you, I did not do the math to tell you percentage-wise how many people are doing that, but I can tell you that there are a lot of people that's struggling.
Well, you know, I know we have high school students, first-time job. I think 725, you know, if 725 is the way to start a high school for a very first job, I don't think that's bad.
I don't think that's bad for a high school person either. But when you got a family that's trying to feed a family of four, that's terrible.
Yes, it is.
That's terrible.
Yes, it is.
That's terrible.
But I think in many cases, because we had this discussion the other day, and we had people calling in on this, professional people, you know, I own a business. I own two businesses, in fact. And I don't have anybody working at minimum wage. I couldn't get anybody to take a job at minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at a lot of jobs, even if it is to start at minimum wage, if they did start them, the idea is to move them up as soon as possible, because no employer wants to have to train and retrain and go through this. You're looking for that stability as well as paying for the responsibility that a higher wage actually makes.
Well, I understand that too, but I also realized that I had two children that went to school, and, you know, we were just regular middle class family. But one of the things my children did, they did a lot to substitute and to work to make sure that they were substituting some of the things that we probably could not afford. And my daughter worked, I know, tirelessly. You know, we had a budget for them.
Right.
That budget did not meet their needs, you know, what they wanted. I mean, we're saying we're going to give you the basics, but they wanted more. So they were willing to invest their time to go out and learn. And I think what it did was teach them responsibility, accountability. And today they are they can manage a budget better than probably anybody on Wall Street, because they learn how to take the funds that they had and manage them well.
Sure.
To me, I think that was great. So
even did they work at minimum wage?
They did. Some of they worked at minimum wage, but they moved themselves up. But guess what?
Now,
we're talking about
That's exactly right.
But guess what? We're talking about 1990. See,
okay.
Versus today, 2014.
Sure.
So the things and the things that they needed in 1990, they didn't have cell phones back there. When, you know, because we bought her a bag.
I bet you were very happy about that. Yeah. Okay.
They didn't have cell phones. There are a lot of things that they did not have that they are having to, you know, to have today. Technology was so different.
Sure.
So I think, as you know, 24 years ago, I do think there should be some change. I don't think we should have. You can take $10.10 an hour and still move them up, because most of the time you're probably not going to give them as much hours. You could probably give a student 40 hours at $7.25 versus giving them 20 hours at 10. You see what I'm saying? So it's going to balance out about the same.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you're going to find a lot of employer. But what about just the aspect of free market? Does free market work? That's been a tenet of our whole existence here in the United States. Free market, the give and take. Somebody used the example the other day of a babysitter. A babysitter was making $10 an hour. And I said, yes. And that was a negotiated price between the parents and the babysitter. It wasn't a set wage. It was what they wanted, this babysitter, and she wanted this amount of money, and they were able to strike a deal. Why doesn't that work, the same tenet, work in the economy?
I think that would be good if it happens. But if you go back, you know, how many people will be able to negotiate that kind of a contract? If you make that general and just say, for instance, like one like me walked up to you today and you were going to hire somebody. You say you got two jobs, you got two businesses.
Right.
So I walked up to you today, and so say 725 is what we have today, and I have some qualifications.
And now, I'm not going to pay you 725 an hour.
I don't know, but you don't have to pay me. I mean,
but
I have to negotiate.
No,
I would have to negotiate with you to ask you whether or not you would move it from 725.
No, actually, Joyce, I look at your qualifications. When I'm looking at a candidate, I look at their qualifications and then make them an offer based on the fact of the qualifications. If I have somebody that I'm not going to have to train as much as somebody who knows nothing about this business or about my jewelry business, then I'm going to pay them more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the way I do it. It has to be based on some experience.
But I'm saying, I'm so glad you are an exception to the rule.
I think really not. But okay,
really. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt because that does not always happen. That is not always the case because, and I hate to say this, but I have from my experience,
mm-hmm.
I can look at, say, for instance, a white female.
Okay.
And an African-American female.
Okay.
We walk up together.
Okay.
And, you know, automatically, I'm going to just be honest, she's going to have a $2 or $3 advantage over me. I don't care. We can come in with the same qualifications. We can come in with everything equal. But I promise you that you will pay the white person more than you will pay me. I promise you that.
Even if her personality, even if the black gal's personality is more stunning?
You're not going to deal with my personality.
No, I am, because I look for personality, honey, when I hire.
Well, you see, like I said, you are an exception to the rule. That just does not happen in the real world. I'm so happy to hear you say that.
Sure.
Because now you tell me that you are equal opportunity employer.
Absolutely.
And I love that. But you're not going to find that every day in everyday life. I have experienced it, and I can tell you that for a fact.
Well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But. When you get out of entry-level jobs, let's use Burger King,
mm-hmm.
let's use McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
let's use any of those, Dairy Queen, all of those type of jobs. When you move out of those jobs,
mm-hmm.
don't you think that changes? I mean, we had lawn care people calling in last week saying that they don't pay anybody minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
They're all at $8.59, $9.50 to start.
Mm-hmm.
To start.
I don't think
and
that's
all
good.
All of them want people that they can count on to be there. So as they progress and learn the job well, they will give them more money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just don't know of a lot of jobs where just staying at minimum wage, even McDonald's hires people to start, but their whole premise is to get somebody in there and train them and move them forward.
Well, like I said, I am at my age. I've seen it go from, I mean, I can remember me working for $4 a day, not hours, $4 for, well, it was a half day. And then for a half day, it was $4.
Right.
And then I remember.
That was when the minimum wage was a lot less, Joyce,
that was
right?
Before. Well, you remember.
That was before there was minimum wage.
You got to understand, I think it was like $2.25. I think when this thing first started, it was like $2.25.
Something like that, yeah.
Right. And then it left from $2.25, and then it went to $5.25.
I worked for 50 cents an hour when
well,
I first
you know,
went to work.
If you think about me working a half a day for, you know, 6 hours of $4, do the math.
Right, but I'm saying
but
I
I'm
work
just
for
saying,
50
so,
cents an
so
hour.
So progressively,
yeah.
Don't you think progressively that things should just change progressively? So I'm looking at when my children at 725,
mm-hmm.
14, 15, 20 years, 25 years ago versus today, you know, and if you look at how, you know, your business and other businesses have grown exponentially, don't you think that it would be advantageous for you to look at, you know, get hiring someone at $10 at that minimum wage who have very good qualities, and really you go really
well,
I think
that's
you're
the key word.
Right.
That's the key word.
Key what?
If they have the
good
qualities.
Well, I don't
that's
think
right.
You will be hiring, I don't care, anyone at any wage if they don't have the qualifications. Right, right.
Well, that's right.
Right.
But, I mean, even if I wanted to train somebody,
right,
and start them out to train.
Well,
the
I can if when you're talking about training, and like I said, you know what, I always tell you there are always ways to negotiate. You
absolutely.
See what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I don't think anything is ever cut and dry. This is like a way where you can start. I mean, you can even probably do a person part-time or in a train. You could put a person in a training session and pay them $7.25, you know, and then when you hire
in
them
truth,
permanently.
I probably would start them at $8 an hour, to tell you the truth.
But I'm here again. I love you because you are an exception to the rule. That's not going to happen every day. But I do think if you were going into a training session, mm-hmm. I mean, I think the $7.25 will work. And you say, okay, now that you've passed that training bar, sure. I'm getting ready to fully hire you. Now you can fully hire that person at $10.10 an hour. This is what I'm trying to talk about.
I think that a lot of employers mm-hmm. have a problem with being, you know, we have so many regulations and mm-hmm. so many things that are put on the backs of the employers. This idea that we are making all this money and my business has grown. Actually, in the last 5 years, my business has shrunk tremendously.
Mm-hmm. I can believe that.
Sure. And being in the jewelry business has been particularly tough because jewelry hasn't been the thing that everybody was out buying.
Everybody now getting costume jewelry. I mean, I look at all of my beautiful pieces that I had, and I basically put them away now because I told my daughter, I said, if I die today, please make sure you go through all of those little boxes because they are where I have stored like my nice pearls or right. string of pearls because I don't need a nice string of pearls today. All I need to go to is what, you know, some, you know, I could go to Belk's now and go to the little jewelry thing and
concession,
get
yeah.
a beautiful set of jewelry, what, 12, 20 bucks, 25 bucks, and it's going to look as good, if not better, than the one that you pay $200 for. So yeah. I understand that. And that's kind of where the middle class is. Here again is what I'm telling you. The middle class is declining. We're getting poorer and poorer or richer and richer as the middle class declines.
I agree with you.
And my point is that we have got to do everything we can to sustain the middle class and to bring back those businesses and to improve that quality of life where we can sustain our middle class because that is the backbone of everything, in my opinion, the middle class. We have
sure.
carried that. If you look at, I talk to my staff a lot, and we talk a lot. When I look at, you know, the people who are kind of, you know, in the lower, you know, poverty level versus someone in the rich level, if you put them together, they mirror each other. They don't really have to worry about anything. It's the middle class who are working hard to sustain, you know, both our, you know, the poorest of the poorest among us, while we, you know, help the richest of the richer get richer. So that is where I'm coming from with that.
Sure, I understand.
Mm-hmm. You understand that?
Sure, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. But I think that if you expect businesses to pick up the, I'll use the word slack, mm-hmm. for lack of a better way to say it,
right.
that you're going to see businesses pulling back because they just can't take anymore, whether it is the Affordable Care Act, whether it is the taxes, everything that we end up paying are taking away from, I mean, I know plenty of business owners that aren't making nothing.
Okay. You know what? I'm so glad you mentioned that because this, what you just said, is key to the whole thing. If we had politicians, if we had congressional leaders, if we had people who stood up and believed could work and help to change that, see, I think this is where the problem is. We are not working together to make sure that we come out with a very negotiable way so that we can be inclusive to everyone and see how can you help small businesses grow? How can you help sustain the small business? But when we stand up and we put a substitute party between the two parties that refuses to allow the two parties who used to work together, then you put this kind of in-between party, if I can say it. And so
party are you talking
I'm
about?
I'm talking about the Tea Party.
Oh.
The Tea Party has
tea
risen
party.
Between the Republicans and the Democrats. And it's like they don't want the Republicans to do anything with the Democrats. And so it's like they got their backs to the Democrats and their face to the Republicans, and they are daring them to work together. And I think that has been detrimental to America. And I think it has hurt America because that has hurt your business.
I think even President Obama has hurt. When he was in Maryland yesterday and was making comment when he was at the governor's race, that if he said he liked apple pie, the Republicans would say they didn't.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think, you know, it has come very extreme.
Right.
And even at the top,
right,
we're not saying, why don't you come over and try some of my apple pie?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're
well,
saying.
Well, see, this is what I'm saying.
Sure.
I think you are all, businesses are struggling.
Yes, we are.
They're struggling not because of things that you want to do. They're struggling because the elected officials are not looking at you. They're looking at those who have invested the special interests and not your interest, the people interest. And when you look at special interests, you're going to only be targeting a select few.
Correct.
When the rest of Main Street, you're looking at Wall Street.
Correct.
Versus Main Street. If you don't sustain Main Street,
we won't have a Wall Street.
You won't have a Wall Street.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm saying. So if we can't work together, if you like, you know, we're in a tug of war,
mm-hmm,
how will we ever be able to help the middle class? And so this is why I'm in this race, to say, I don't care about all that. So maybe it's a good thing nobody has invested in my campaign, because I can say what, you know, the blank, blank I want to say and do what I want to do, because I'm going to make sure I'm going to be listening to what you have to say and then take it to the floor and say, this is what Ann told me she needs, and this is what we need to work on to get done. And we need to get this done. We need to put all this craziness aside, and we need to start working for the people. That's why I'm in this race. And I don't care whether I don't have any money or not. It's not about money. It's about getting out there and making sure that I get people out to vote.
Well, we have Joyce Dickerson here with us today, and she is fired up and ready to go, as Edith Childs would say.
Yes, I am passionate about the people. I'm passionate about when I go on the countryside and I meet a little elderly person, and that person is trying to, you know, decide whether she's going to take a half a pill or a whole pill, you know, of her medication.
Well, I tell you
what, that bothers me.
I tell you one thing that bothers me, and we're going to run out of time here in just mm-hmm. a second. Maybe we can address it when we come back, is our elder people who get food stamps only get $18 a month,
mm-hmm.
when able-bodied working people get a whole lot more. But that's about the max that elderly people on a fixed income can get, $18
mm-hmm.
a month
mm-hmm.
for food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even worth it.
It's
not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I tell you what, if you got a question for Joyce, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. News is up.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're back here. Joyce Dickerson and I are having spirited conversation. It's a shame you missed out what we were talking about off the air here, folks. All right. But Joyce, you are running against Tim Scott.
Yes.
We've talked about the minimum wage.
Right.
You feel the minimum wage should be $10.10. And if you've joined us during this discussion that we had earlier, you know where she stands on this. But let's talk about some of the other issues that are facing Washington, D.C. and the Congress and the Senate. What are some of the other things that you feel needs to be done? You know, we ended up talking about how the Democrats and the Republicans aren't working together. And that's causing one of the big breakdowns, of course. What do you think that you could bring to the table that would change that, Joyce?
First of all, getting elected.
Okay, well, you got to get there first. That's right, Joyce.
The first thing, I've got to get elected.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also one, I think this is one of my stronger points, is I love to chat with people. I like to build relationships, and I like to kind of feel out where people are coming from. And I believe that if you can find a way to to negotiate, to talk about and sit down and chat and find out what are the things that we have in common versus those things that we not have in common, and then look at how we can, you know, we can compromise. I think this, we're at a point where we're going to have to look at, for the betterment of this country, for the betterment of the people that we are elected to serve, they're looking to us for leadership. And I hear this word all the time, is that we like leadership, and I truly agree. So I think at some point, someone is going to have to step up to the plate, and I'm going to take full responsibility. I'm going to take the leadership on some of these issues. Now, whether they go anywhere, but you still got to, someone has to step up and take leadership. And today, I don't think any of us, you know, the regular voters, can actually say, you know, who is actually taking the lead on certain things. And that's what I say. I think it's all going to be about trying to find a way to lead and be accountable.
But as you look at the issues, you know, I look at Washington, D.C. I see a bureaucracy that just seems bloated and overgrown. I don't see how we can cut this back to something that's manageable. People talk about smaller government, more affordable government. How do we get to some of these places?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I've learned from being on Richland County Council for 9 years, and one of the things we have a lot of, if you look at the county per se, and if you compare that those county issues with the issues that we have in D.C., and we formed a lot of committees that we can, like, you know, look at, say, for instance, a thing like Ebola. We can look at various other issues, and we would take that to a committee, and we start working out through that committee, put certain people in that committee to make sure.
We have a lot of committees in Washington, D.C.
But that's what I'm saying. We have them, but that is the problem. Things, D.C. don't work long enough. I mean,
They've been gone the whole time.
That's my problem. They don't work long enough to get the job done. We council members work 11 months out of the year. You can't get anything done just going there in 90 days. No, I think they don't have long enough work hours, but they go home with a large paycheck.
Yeah,
but
they don't have.
If you compare if you divide the hours that they work and their paycheck, they're talking about they're the ones that's being overpaid.
Yeah.
That's my problem. And so I think.
So, Joyce, would you go in and say we need to reduce the paychecks?
If that's what it takes, you know what? Since you want to stop everybody else from getting, then you don't need to get paid either. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the problem. They don't. How can you leave work under? Would you leave your job today knowing that all your jewelry was stacked out in the middle of the floor?
No.
Would you run home until you made sure that all those pieces were put into place and you can go home when you come back tomorrow? It's inventory. They don't care what it is. They just leave it undone. Oh, it's Friday, it's 5 o'clock. We get a plane. We got to get out of here. And they don't care what they leave on the table right now. And that, to me, is the problem. They need to be able to work. The American people need to make sure that we work those hours and take care of their business, that those elected officials are accountable for the time that needs to be done to get their work done. And that's where things have been in committees for years.
Yep.
Can't get them out of committee so they can even get to the floor. That's the problem.
It is a problem. And I tell you, the other problem is, though, what they say, though, is they're working when they're home.
Bull.
I mean, they're having committee
Bull.
Meetings, they're having committee town halls, et cetera.
But town halls is not working with your community. Town halls is just a little bit of a time for you to go out and say, hey, I'm down here, do you have a problem? But that is not working on that issue that is in your committee. Those people in the town hall are not on that committee,
That's right. They
cannot make a decision. So unless you went out there and asked them or asking them, how do you want me to vote on a certain issue, then to me, the town hall is null and void.
Okay. So, Joyce, when you go up there, are you going to be the only one up there?
I guess so.
She's got to be a committee of one, folks. You know, these are all good points. These are all good points. But, of course, then we have one of Tim Scott's big issues is taking care of our veterans. What do you say, Joyce?
What I say?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. when I first entered
into... Your husband is a veteran. Right, retired military.
Well, we never heard anything about... I don't know Tim Scott. I've never met him. I just, you know what I've read about him and read his voting records. I don't know anything about him. The first thing when I came out, as you can see, I came out with four main issues.
Yep.
Women, my seniors, and my seniors' health, wealth, and wellness, what we just talked about earlier. And I talked about women issues, domestic violence, and those things. Those veterans were very high on my list. Mm-hmm. And the reason I said that they were high because I worked with some female veterans that were homeless. And that's when it brought home to me that our veterans were in trouble. And so there was an angel house that we were working to try to get, you know, some women from being homeless and working them back into society. So I came out saying I wanted to support veterans and their families and making sure that their quality of life was improved.
Right.
They have served us, and it's time for us to serve them.
Exactly.
Well, now, Tim Scott and all the rest of them, well, the selected Senator Tim Scott and all the rest of them, did not really start addressing this issue for the most part until we had a crisis. When the crisis came up, not everybody want to have a program now for the veterans. They want to do this for the veterans. But what about, you know, Walter Reed should have been a red flag to tell us that we were having problems with that VA. We shouldn't have waited till this year to be addressing this issue. So Tim Scott said he was raised, the selected Tim Scott said he was raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. Only when the crisis come out, now we find out that he has a father that is retired from the Air Force after 20-plus years, and he's got two brothers. Now, wait a minute. He wasn't talking about that before. Nobody heard anything about a dad or a father or whatever you want to call him that was in the service, and he had a father who retired. But now all of a sudden he's going around, he want to have little programs. He's been to the First Baptist Church in Columbia, and he's doing all this for the Vietnam veterans, but he wasn't doing it before. And then he voted against what I think it was about $14 million to help veteran programs. So now all of a sudden, wait a minute, should you speak out both sides of your mouth? You either going to do it or you don't, or which one is it? So I've been for veterans. I didn't come out with the crisis. We were there before the crisis came.
Well, good for you, Joyce. Mm-hmm. Good for you. You know, and I do think we have a Kynard House here, mm-hmm. which is for homeless vets.
Mm-hmm.
That is a program that is supported through our veterans and our women of women's
but it
auxiliary.
Wasn't Tim Scott, was it?
Oh, no.
It wasn't Lindsey Graham, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, we did that on our own right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. All right, I got the feisty Joyce Dickerson here with me this afternoon. She wants Tim Scott's seat, and she's not bashful to tell you that she wants it.
That's right.
All right, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Joyce Dickerson. She wants to be the next senator from South Carolina. She is running against Tim Scott. And Joyce has been, how long have you been on county council down there in Richland?
9.5 years.
9.5 years. So is your... is your seat up at this point? Or?
No, it's safe.
It's safe. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
2016.
All right. Well, listen, Joyce, you know, one of the other big issues running out there is, of course, immigration. We have had oodles and oodles of children coming across our southern borders. If you were in the Senate, where would you be on this?
I would be on this on a way of trying to get them back home.
Okay.
I think they need to go back home, but I do think we should not mistreat them while they're here. As I said before, that's like someone coming into your home. I don't think if a person or persons come into your home that you should treat them badly. I think if you got some food, feed them. But I do think you need to figure out a way to get them to their prospective place, and I think their place is to go back home because it's so expensive for us to actually take care of that many children. Sure. Mm-hmm. If you look at our schools, everything that we would have to do, there'll be lots of recipients in our Medicaid system. I mean, we're going to have a lot of responsibilities that I don't think that, since they're not paying into this system, I do think that they need to go back home. But I do think we should take care of them while they're here. But we're going to send them back home.
I think we should. I think I have seen basically our government moving them to different locations, smaller groups, so that they can go start going to public schools.
They're dispersing them to different locations. But, you know, being on council, and I oversee 3 school districts, and I oversee that budget and have to vote on that budget every year. And it has to do with classroom sizes. It's a tax base. And so when you move into a specific tax base, you know, that also has a strain on how we actually take care of students. So sure. I think it's that if you're not paying anything toward helping to relieve that financial burden that's already on the schools, and we got overcrowded schools, we got schools that are deteriorating, we got schools that are falling down, we can't maintain schools along the corridor of shame, and then we're going to merge other students into a school.
Right.
I think it's just putting too much of a burden on our existing system.
I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think they should go back too.
Huh?
I think we are, but I don't think we're moving in the direction to do that. In fact, you know, it seems to me like it's kind of dropped off the radar. It was such a big discussion when all this was coming across the border, right? And now they're back in, they're in schools, and we've heard hardly anything about them.
Well, here again is what I talked about earlier, and it's about leadership. Somebody got to take the responsibility. So you can't say, you know, you can't be made for television. You know, I see a lot of ads, and it is made for television. I want to get in front of a TV screen. I want to look good. And when you leave there, I mean, it's like it's null and void. Somebody has to be constant leaders. Somebody has to take responsibility. Someone has to say, we got to follow this thing through and not wait till you go to somebody and go like, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't bother this right now. This is an election time and we don't want to mess up this. That's why nobody's talking about it, because it's about who gonna get reelected. That's what it's all about.
And that, to me, is one of the biggest problems. Excuse me. Biggest problems that we have going right now.
That's exactly right. Because you want to rush, you stop everything to go back home to get reelected. And most of these people who are rushing back home do not have any problems. Most of these people are in gerrymandered districts, both black and white, and those districts are so safe, other than somebody like Mitch McConnell who was having a problem, I understand. But, you know, other than people like that, for the most part, everybody got a jerry. I heard a person say this weekend, you know, I don't really have to do a thing because, you know, I'm going to automatically get reelected. That is, to me, I mean, that's kind of a little bit of an arrogance when you're just so sure
right.
that you're going to get reelected because you're in a gerrymandered district. I have a problem with that. You know,
absolutely.
I think you should, even if you are, you should have the same tenacity. You should put forth the same efforts to let people know that you respect and love them, regardless of whether you know that they're going to vote for you, know that you're going to get reelected. So I think that's a little bit of an abuse and a little bit of arrogancy.
I agree with you. I agree. So what about all the, 12 million illegal immigrants here in our country? What should be done about that? Should they just be given amnesty?
No, I think they need to go through the process to be just like everybody else. I think if they're here, then they probably just need to figure out a way how you're going to start making them go through the process so that they can get legal citizenship. No, and I don't think the amnesty, and if you got to work through it, you need to figure out a way how you're going to do it so that those people who have come through the system legally do not feel bad and that they are privileged. No.
Yeah,
that's my view.
Should we send them back and then let them come back?
I don't know how you go send somebody back. This business. No, I don't know whether you can send them back, but I do think there should be. First of all, you got to go out there and start to identify them because.
Well, there you go.
That's the first thing. Absolutely. Because I saw a program not too long ago, and it kind of struck me that one of the newscasters had found a person who had been living here for a long time, and they were living in New York.
Right.
Strange. And it was so funny when I looked at that person who's here illegally, and I saw the big 52-inch screen television, and her apartment was looking better than somebody, you know, I know every day. And I'm like, she's an illegal immigrant, and I got people who've been here all their lives, and her lifestyle and her job style was much better than those who are citizens of the United States. Something is wrong with that picture.
Absolutely, there's something wrong.
Yeah, so.
Do you think that, though, in some aspects that people of the United States have become a little bit complacent? Do you think we have too many handouts when we have over half the population, well, almost half the population with food stamps? Do you think that there's a problem there, Joyce?
I believe in helping the poorest of the poorest. And I think we should never be able to turn our backs on the poorest. But I also believe that the poor also have a responsibility to take responsibilities for some of their own actions. But I do think that, you know, that you can, you know, there are lots of instances where the system is being abused.
Sure.
And I don't know whether we have the wherewithal to be able to identify where those abusive parts come in there at. But I do think we also always remember the poorest of the poorest in every instance. But I do think the system is abused. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I always go back to, there for the grace of God go I. Mm-hmm. And I may need help too someday.
Mm-hmm. That's what I say. That is why I say I'm very compassionate about this particular issue. And it's just unfortunate that people who don't see it will abuse it and not use it correctly. But I don't want someone to be a recipient, and then I see my little children walking around hungry, naked, and I've got to feed them in school and things like that. So I just think that there's a lot of abuse that it needs to be taken care of.
I agree. Well, Joyce Dickerson, it is always a pleasure to sit down and talk with you. I'll give you now 2 minutes to tell the folks why they should elect you to the position of Senate for the state of South Carolina.
Okay, thank you so very much. And I'm so happy to have this conversation with you today because it has allowed me to express the way I feel about the citizens of South Carolina and this nation. I am very excited about running for the United States Senate. It is an opportunity for me to serve the people and also be a voice for the people. And I think one of my slogans is, you know, Joyce will be your right voice. And I believe that I am the right choice. If you look at my record compared to all the other records and see some of the things that I have accomplished to work with women and making sure that our women have a great, great lifestyle, health-wise and wellness. So making sure my seniors are taken care of. My husband, as a veteran, he's first choice in my life. So I just want people to know that I will be a very, very compassionate senator. I will be one that they could listen to, that will listen to them, that they could always come to. I'll probably give them my cell phone number and say thank you for the opportunity to serve.
Thank you very much, Joyce Dickerson. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody. Tomorrow afternoon, we start at 3:30. Congressman Jeff Duncan, followed up by Jill Bossy at 4:30. So make sure you tune in at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. Bye-bye, everybody.